Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, April 28th, 2016. Thank you for joining us this evening live from Washington. I'm Dimyake Mwakalielie. Here are our top stories this evening. Suspected ZANU-PF activists set fire on homesteads belonging to members of the opposition Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe.
In Mkuamumbe village in Makoni North, some homesteads were razed to ground by suspected ZANU-PF supporters. That is after a ZANU-PF meeting in the area.
Chinoy Hospital selected as a center of excellence following successful obstetric fistula operations.
Our main objective in Zimbabwe is to end obstetric fistula, both the historic cases and the new cases.
And opposition parties slam President Mugabe's government for failing to repatriate 32 Zimbabwean women stranded in Kuwait.
We need a Pan-African engagement on this issue. We need both at the SADC level, we see increased cases. Only the other day was a story about Malawi girls and young women, Mozambique.
Stay tuned for these stories and much more coming up. Zimbabwe's opposition Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe Party, led by Elton Mangoma, claims that several homesteads belonging to its members in Makoni North constituency in Manicaland province were set on fire Tuesday night by suspected ZANU-PF activists. Party spokesperson Pishaye Mchauraya claims that the affected villagers lost several household items, including foodstuffs, when their homes were set on fire. He says the villagers reported the matter at Mayo police station, but no one has since been arrested in connection with the arson. Police spokesperson Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba says they had not yet received a report of this incident. ZANU-PF Chairperson Simon Kayamoyo was not reachable for comment. Mchauraya tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri that they will also pursue the matter through political channels.
In Mkuamumbe village in Makoni North, some homesteads were razed to ground by suspected ZANU-PF supporters. That is after a ZANU-PF meeting in the area over the weekend.
How do you know it's an act that was carried out by ZANU-PF supporters?
The rally warned all suspected opposition members to either join ZANU-PF or leave the area to avoid unspecified actions. And the burning of houses, we suspect it is this unspecified actions. ZANU-PF is now scared of the growth, the tremendous growth of RDZ, especially in the rural areas, where we are getting the endorsement of village heads, the endorsement of all the opinion leaders and whoever matters in the rural areas. Our support is growing so much, and I think that is actually shocking ZANU-PF, and they're in a state of panic.
Did you report this to the police?
We reported the case at Mayo police station, but we are also going to treat it politically.
Where are the victims as we speak, Mr. Mchaure?
Some of them, we have taken them to a safe place. Some have gone to Harare for some counseling. They've been taken by President Elton Mangoma. But I can safely confirm that everything was destroyed.
That was Pishaye Mchauraya, spokesperson of the Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri from Makoni North, Manicaland province. Suspected ZANU-PF activists this week threatened to kill MDC tea supporters who attended a recent meeting addressed by party leader Morgan Tsvangirai. The MDC formation of Professor Welshman Ngube says it is shameful that the government had failed to assist in the repatriation of 32 Zimbabwean women stranded in Kuwait who were promised lucrative jobs but found themselves performing menial jobs. In a statement, the MDCN said it is ironic that President Mugabe recently traveled to New York to sign a climate change agreement, blowing thousands of dollars in the process, and yet his government cannot rescue the women and girls. Another opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, also slammed the government for failing to take care of the women and girls. The 32 were part of a group of about 200 Zimbabweans who were lured to Kuwait in the Middle East by some employment agencies after they were promised top jobs, only to be turned into commercial sex workers and some low-paying jobs. A parliamentary delegation led by Speaker Jacob Mudenda is currently in Kuwait, where attempts are underway to bring some of the women back to Zimbabwe. Controversial Zimbabwean businessman Wiknell Chiwayo has reportedly bought some tickets for the women's flights back to Zimbabwe.
First, we were very shocked when the news in the media reported that about 200 Zimbabwean women, and mostly young women, have been trafficked to Kuwait. And it was even much more distressing when we started to hear the stories of their conditions in Kuwait and the abuse, the violations, and that some of them had to run away, others were rescued, and they were now in shelter and were trying to get back home. So in the last 48 hours, it has been very...
Apologize, actually, that was the wrong tape. We were actually playing the interview that Marvelous had with us with Nyaradzai Gumbonjwanda, African Union Goodwill Ambassador on Early Childhood Marriages. Well, here's what she had to say.
First, we were very shocked when the news in the media reported that about 200 Zimbabwean women, and mostly young women, have been trafficked to Kuwait. And it was even much more distressing when we started to hear the stories of their conditions in Kuwait and the abuse, the violations, and that some of them had to run away, others were rescued, and they were now in shelter and were trying to get back home. So in the last 48 hours, it has been very encouraging, and it has been good news to hear that there's a Zimbabwean delegation of parliamentarians that has been in Kuwait, and there has been a pledge of commitment to provide tickets for the 32 women to come back to Zimbabwe. For us, that is good news, and we hope that it is not a commitment which is transitory, but that the Zimbabwean government and the government of Kuwait would work strongly together to make sure that the 200 women are able to come back home and are able to be supported if they come back home.
But there's also been a concern raised by critics who are saying, what has been the role of women's organizations? And also, are you going to be taking this up to the AU for discussion? Because it's not only Zimbabwe. It seems the whole of Africa's young girls and women are involved in this human trafficking.
Yes, I am very much aware of the many efforts that Zimbabwean women have been taking to both address the issue at the very practical level of providing repatriation. I'm aware of the efforts by the Zimbabwean women to raise awareness. We know that there was even an effort for a public protestation last month. I'm aware of organizations that provide counseling, legal aid services, that are doing the best that they can, only that at times some of these efforts are not as visible, but we cannot discredit and not recognize that there is definitely some significant effort that is going on. In terms of the AU, we need a Pan-African engagement on this issue. We need both at the SADC level, we see increased cases. Only the other day was a story about Malawi girls and young women, Mozambique. And we know the data from Ethiopia, from Kenya. So we need a strong Pan-African intervention around the issue of human trafficking. We cannot achieve Agenda 2063 if the young women and the women of Africa are experiencing all these modern forms of slavery, from child marriage, human trafficking, and all the kind of abuses that we are seeing. So we need, as a continent, to really step up our efforts for opportunities for young women and girls, so that when people choose to leave their country, they're going as a matter of choice, and also with the full information and with the legal protection around them.
That was Nyaradzai Gumbonjanda, African Union Goodwill Ambassador on Early Child Marriages, and she was speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuya from Geneva, Switzerland. Here now is the interview that we told you about earlier, Wiknell Chiwayo, Zimbabwean businessman, who's reportedly bought some tickets for the women stuck in Kuwait to return to Zimbabwe.
I received a call from Kindness Barasa, who is the chairman of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee in charge of foreign affairs. And I also spoke to the Speaker of the Parliament in respect to these girls who are stranded in Kuwait. So as a patriotic Zimbabwean, I had no option but to act. And also as a successful businessman and captain of the industry, it is our responsibility to support national cause.
So when are they expected to come back to Zimbabwe, do you know?
I'm told they arrived Saturday evening. About nine of them didn't have passports, so they were busy processing their emergency traveling documents today and tomorrow, but the tickets are for Saturday evening so that they travel together with the Speaker of the Parliament and other officials.
Some are saying, is this not the responsibility of the government, Sir Wigner?
Yes, it is the responsibility of the government, but where it has been clearly mentioned by Minister of Foreign Affairs, Simbarashi Mbeki, is that the government has no money to fund those. You know, somebody must be seen to come in. You know, some patriotic person must come in and do something.
That was Zimbabwean businessman Wiknell Chiwayo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. The Zimbabwean government has selected Chinoy General Hospital as a center of excellence in obstetric fistula operations, following successful medical procedures on 129 women who sought help at the Mashonaland West Health Facility. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa has more from the provincial capital.
Health Minister David Pararenyatwa, who has been touring various health centers, said the hospital was selected as a result of its excellent reputation of carrying out obstetric fistula operations. Dr. Pararenyatwa said United Blawayo Hospitals in the Matabeleland region is said to be accorded the same status. Some international and local medical practitioners has been carrying out the obstetric fistula operations designed to rectify women's injuries sustained when giving birth. Dr. Pararenyatwa noted that there was need to mobilize resources to ensure that most poor women benefited from free surgeries.
We want this program not to end with camps, but to do that, it means we must have enough resources for it. That's why UNFPA comes in to also assist and other partners to assist. Otherwise, we'll end up asking for patients to pay for that service because there will not be any resources. And once you ask patients who are poor to pay, you can be sure that they won't come.
United Nations Population Fund country representative Dr. Chik Sisete Diane, who visited Chinoy Hospital with Dr. Pararenyatwa, said more than 500 women are on the fistula operations waiting list. Dr. Tidiane said he was happy to see women who have lived with injuries for many years receiving free surgeries.
You see women smiling, and this shows how appreciative they are of the result of the 500 women that are now queuing in expectation of a repair, which means that the gaps are around and we need to focus our attention to respond to those needs. Is that for so many years, women with this condition have been suffering in silence. We have seen this example of a woman who said that she has become a new woman.
Joy, sheer joy, and nothing else was written all over the faces of some Zimbabwean women who recently underwent successful obstetric fistula operations at Chinoy General Hospital. So far this year, 28 women have benefited from the program that seeks to correct a situation most of these women have lived with for as many as 20 years. One of the beneficiaries, Bliss Fambira from Nyamweda Communal Lands in Mondoro, said she developed difficulties in passing urine in 2010 after giving birth to her first child. Fambira urged women with child birth scars to seek medical attention.
If there is someone suffering from this condition,
She should not be shy to share what she is facing with others, because from such discussions one can find someone who is aware of organizations that help women in this condition.
Another woman who only wanted to be identified as Chipo for all the valley in Manicaland province had their family torn apart when she sustained injuries when giving birth 12 years ago. Chipo said her husband left the matrimonial home, saying he could not stand the putrid stench emanating from her urinal system. Women and the Health Alliance International National Program Coordinator Priscilla Mabandi said their main objective in Zimbabwe is to end obstetric fistula. Mabandi said the obstetric fistula operation program is also designed to impart skills to local doctors.
As Women and Health Alliance, our main objective in Zimbabwe is to end obstetric fistula, both the historic cases and the new cases. So what we've pretty much done is we did a campaign, an outreach campaign to demystify the actual condition of obstetric fistula, because a lot of people leave it shrouded in mystery. We've been on radio, we've been sometimes on TV, we've had newspaper articles explaining to people that this condition can actually be treated medically through surgery, that are actually aimed at assisting local doctors to be able to cope in terms of training them to deal with this condition when they encounter it.
Women and the Health Alliance International is working in conjunction with Chinoy General Hospital, the Minister of Health, and the partners from the United Nations in tackling obstetric fistula in Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Coming up, can Zimbabwe contain resurfacing political violence? Stay tuned to find out. But first, a look at regional and international news. 2.5 years of civil war have destroyed South Sudan's economy. The country's leaders say they need urgent international support to rebuild and restore peace. When South Sudan gained independence in 2011, its oil wealth made its government one of the richest in East Africa. But now, after more than 2 years of war, it is among the poorest. Fighting has cut oil production by half, while crude prices worldwide have collapsed. The South Sudanese pound has also lost almost 90% of its value, and inflation is skyrocketing. President Salva Kiir and former rebel leader Riek Machar are meant to form a transitional government this week aimed at ending the war. But there is not enough money to keep the new government going. You're listening to Studio 7, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. As reported earlier, several homes belonging to supporters of the Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe in Manicaland province were reportedly set on fire Tuesday night by suspected ZANU-PF activists a few days after MDCT supporters were also allegedly threatened with death in Mashingo province by ruling party activists. At the same time, Zimbabwe People First leader Joyce Mujuru was also said to have been intimidated by suspected ZANU-PF activists recently after attending a church service. Reports indicate that there is an escalation of political friction in the country ahead of the 2018 national elections. Election violence has always gripped Zimbabwe during elections, leaving some people dead and others maimed or displaced. Is ZANU-PF a violent party as being portrayed by opposition parties? Though party spokesperson Simon Kayamoyo was not available to respond to this question, party activist Nick Mangwana tells Studio 7 that the very allegation is nonsensical.
That's pure nonsense. ZANU-PF has got a lot of support. It has got millions of people that support it. It doesn't need to resort to violence to gain a political traction. I mean, to even say ZANU-PF DNA, as if all the members of ZANU-PF are emanating from one same parent, nonsensical. There is nothing like that. If there are rogue elements, they are in every party. I was reading Kota's book, which actually was saying how violent the MDCT is. The MDC would call these people rogue elements because that's not part of their political narrative. So if there is anybody who is violent in ZANU-PF, it's not part of our political narrative. It is rogue elements. I repeat, if there is any such people. But at the moment, we're only dealing with allegations and the political mudslinging that's going on. So really, there is nothing substantial to comment on as far as I'm concerned.
When we talk about, violence in Zimbabwe, is there any way how it can be controlled?
Violence is controlled from the top. Everybody should condemn violence, and people should mean it. And the police should arrest anybody who is involved in political violence. We cannot continue on a pathway of national reconciliation, and yet some people continue to wound other people. Because how can we reconcile? How can we go into a national healing when you're opening other wounds?
That was Nick Mangwana, ZANU-PF UK chairperson, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. We also reached Jacob Mafume of the People's Democratic Party and political commentator Professor Shadrack Guto of the University of South Africa. Mafume tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that ZANU-PF is a violent party.
Well, the DNA of ZANU-PF is that of a violent party. They naturally go towards violence every time they feel under pressure. Right now, they are under pressure because of the fight between G40 and Lacoste. They are in the midst of what I call political cannibalism. Therefore, they tend to be violent towards anyone, opposition, and so forth. So we're not surprised that some of their members are threatening opposition members with violence. It is in their DNA.
Professor Guto, is it true that ZANU-PF has always been violent? Well, people are just making it up.
Well, I don't think people are just talking about it now. ZANU-PF, at that time in control of the state, carried out the violence in Matabeleland right in early part of the 1980s. And we know that up to the middle of 1980s, they later on carried serious violence using state apparatus in wiping out the so-called informal settlements in Harare. They've used violence in elections, and this is not something new. And the violence was also used in land invasions, which was condoned by the state, and then the state endorsed the land invasions and so on. So this is not new. But in terms of party politics in Zimbabwe, I think that the strategy of ZANU-PF is to use both thuggery and other means to supplement the pressure or the violence which is perpetrated by state agencies. So it is nothing new, and I think that Zimbabwe, if this escalates, we don't know where it will go. Zimbabwe has changed. It's not the old Zimbabwe. And if it goes too far, Zimbabwe may burn, because I think people have had enough of this ZANU-PF terrorizing the people and keeping them silent so that they can prop up Mugabe to continue looting the country and being an autocrat that he has become.
Hmm. So, Mr. Mafume, what is the way forward, really? You know, because this has been happening for a long time. What happens next, you know, if people are threatened like this?
I think we need to bring personal accountability to the people who engage in violence. We need to sue them. We need them to take them to international tribunal. We need to shame and name and expose them. But at the end of the day, the people of Zimbabwe have to realize that they have their destiny in their own hands.
Is it possible, Professor Guto, to actually have some kind of maybe talks with ZANU-PF, let's say some kind of engagement between the opposition parties and ZANU-PF to sort out this kind of a problem?
Well, I think that in order to sort it out, both parties, ZANU-PF must accept that there's been violence perpetrated mainly from his side, but not exclusively, and it is willing to be able to bring peace and stability in Zimbabwe so that Zimbabwe can try to chart a new path as they go forward. Mugabe will relinquish power, whether he likes it or not, very soon, either naturally or through other means, through political means. And I think that is important. Secondly, I think the Zimbabwean diaspora ought to wake up and play their part. They are the ones who are propping up the economy in Zimbabwe through remittances and so on. And I don't think that they are playing a useful role in trying to put pressure on political parties at home, particularly ZANU-PF, to be able to see that let the people choose whoever they choose. Thirdly, I think for Zimbabwean citizens, use the modern media. We have information technology that is very advanced and is not the way it was in the 1980s and 90s and so on, to document those who perpetrate violence so that they will be brought to justice. And it is very easy to do, to be able to really document what is going on. Evidence is very important in criminal proceedings.
That was Professor Shadrach Guto of the University of South Africa. You also heard from Jacob Mafume, and they were both speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. It's time now to engage with Chioneso Jani.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This is Chioneso Jani, your host for Time to Engage. We have two fabulous young men, entrepreneurs, energetic, full of life. Please introduce yourselves.
Speaking as Richmond Mlambo, studying accounting with UNISA.
Speaking as Nigel Shinembi, studying informatics with also UNISA.
Hi, Nigel.
Hey, Chioneso, how are you doing? Yeah, I'm happy as well, eh?
Great. And Richmond, how are you?
I'm great. I was just fine.
Now, guys, Nigel, the name of your company and why you started this company.
Our name of the company is called The Chasers. Me and Richmond, we always had passion about buying clothes. So every time we'd get our pocket money, we'd just buy clothes all the time. And basically, Richmond had a passion of opening his own clothing shop. And so then, this other day, I was just sitting. Then I was like, dude, what do you think about if we just set up something called The Chasers? Then he came up with the logo and everything. And then things just started flowing. That's basically how it came up.
I want to ask Richmond, I wanted to find out, is it because of peer pressure of wanting to look good? What happened? Why clothing?
Clothing gets to tell someone who they are. Let's give an example for people who got low self-esteem. Mainly people pose their esteem via clothing. So mainly people, some of them don't have the voice to speak out. They only speak out according to what they wear and stuff.
Can you tell us more about your awards that you have won?
We were entrepreneurs of the year last year because we kept on pushing and people liked our style and how we formed it. So it was just that people were like, no, this is unique. Because, you know, it was not something that is basic because we are concentrating more on the hip-hop fashion and the sporting fashion.
Richmond, have you already started getting clients?
We launched our summer week the beginning of April. So basically what we mainly focusing for now, it was only South Africa and Zimbabwe. We managed to get those agents in each and every university in form of our friends. That's the one who are pushing our brand and selling the stuff. We're targeting students. As we believe, dreams start from a younger age. As we believe, the youth have more power to change the community or the world we live in, you know.
Nigel?
I have a favorite quote of my own that says, pressure makes diamonds. And if there is more pressure in your life and you keep believing yourself and you keep pushing, you actually get there because nothing makes sense if you don't put effort there.
Nice. Richmond, anything you'd like to tell the youth? Last words.
You're never too young to start an empire and never too old to chase a dream. I guess that's all from The Chasers.
Thank you for being with us. This is Time to Engage. Chioneso Jani.
On the Women's Roundtable today, host Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye and Praxedes Jeremiah will tackle the issue of human trafficking in light of what is happening in Kuwait. Find out, tune in and find out how to avoid becoming a victim under such circumstances. You can do that by joining the call and call in 001-202-619-2077. That number again, 202-619-2077. That area code, of course, is 1. Before we go to our recap today, just a heads up that today is the third day of the 57th edition of the Zimbabwe International Trade Fair, taking place in Bulawayo, and exhibitors are expressing confidence that they will strike some lucrative deals. We'll have more for you tomorrow on that. Here's a quick recap now of what we showcased today. Suspected ZANU-PF activists allegedly set fire on homesteads belonging to members of the opposition Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe. And opposition parties slam President Mugabe's government for failing to repatriate 32 Zimbabwean women stranded in Kuwait. And that is our broadcast this Thursday evening. Please stay tuned for Studio 7 in Ndebele, hosted by Ntungamile Nkomo. This is Ndimiake Mwakalielie here in Washington, wishing you a very, very good night.